well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad to be back with you on the program today. Very pleased to have a guest on today's program. As it turns out, the washer repair guys didn't show up to like 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon and ended up not being able to repair the washer. Well, I mean, they could have repaired the washer, but it would have been more expensive to repair the washer than to get a new one. So yay me. Guess I bought myself a Christmas present. I mentioned on yesterday's program, we're going to be talking with Army Reserve Lieutenant Colonel Lauren Sharpless, who won the 40 plus age division in the tactical games in 2024, came in second in the tactical games this year. A little bit different, you know, than what we normally talk about. We generally delve into 2A politics, but there was something about the Colonel's story that just, I don't know, it spoke to me. And I thought, you know, I like, every now and then I like to, you know, branch out and just talk to people about their own experiences. I thought this was a great conversation. I learned a lot about the tactical games, learned a lot about Lieutenant Colonel Sharpless and her training regimen. And I got to say, I mean, I walked away. Well, okay, I didn't actually walk away because I've still been sitting here. But I sat here after this interview more inspired to, you know, get up, get active, do more next year. And who knows, maybe you will have that that same experience that I did after listening to Lieutenant Colonel Lauren Sharpless. Take a look and a listen. Colonel, thank you so much for your time this morning. It's really good to talk with you.
Likewise. Thank you for having me.
You bet. And congratulations once again on a fantastic finish at the Tactical Games.
Thank you.
Can you tell us a little bit about the Tactical Games? I confess, I'm not really aware of this competition.
Yeah, sure. So it's a mixture between functional fitness and shooting. There's multiple stages over the course of either a 2-day or a 3-day competition. It can be, you know, a 2-gun stage where there's minimal fitness involved. It could be a mixture of fitness, you know, then go onto the firing line and shoot. Some of the events are purely strength, purely fitness events. So it's a good mixture of a variety of events and stages to make sure they're actually testing your ability to perform both with fitness and with firearms.
Okay. And so this is not run by the military, right? This is a competition open to everybody.
Correct.
So last year was the first year that you competed. Is that correct?
Right. 2004 was the first year.
And you won your age division. You won the national championship.
Yes, I did.
That's pretty impressive, I got to say.
Thank you. Yeah, I definitely, I was shocked. But, you know, I'm a fit. I'm confident in my fitness. And I was a pretty good shooter. And I had some shooting coaches help me to prepare. So while surprised, I definitely went in expecting to do well because I prepared for it.
Yeah. This year, you placed second. You did not win the national championship, but I got to say that it's still 1-2 finishes, still incredibly impressive from my perspective.
Thank you. Yeah, this year I had a stumble on one of the stages. My stage plan on one of the 2-gun stages, you know, didn't go as expected, and it put me in a deficit with the points that I just couldn't climb out of over the rest of the weekend. So I ended up second.
Does that already motivate you for next year?
Yeah. Yeah. I was definitely disappointed, but you know, in those types of stages, you can't be disappointed in anybody but yourself, but it definitely lights a fire. It's, you know, want to go back and improve myself again next year.
So I have to ask, did you grow up shooting? Was this something that you got into when you joined the Army, or do you have a background as a civilian in shooting?
Yeah, I didn't grow up really exposed or shooting a whole lot. My first, you know, consistent exposure to shooting was when I joined the military. But my husband is from Texas. He grew up doing outdoor activities. So that's really when I started, you know, consistently shooting, going to the range with him. You know, we take our kids out to land that we have where we've set up a range. He teaches, you know, safety protocol and procedures to our kids so they understand, you know, the basics of how to operate, you know, and load, you know, and shoot a firearm. So it really wasn't until we got married that it became a consistent activity in my life.
And how different is it? I mean, I'll be honest with you. I mean, I don't do a lot of like IPSC shooting or anything like that when I'm, you know, plinking on my property. I'm generally standing there. Maybe, you know, I'm prone, but I'm not moving around a whole lot. What can you talk again kind of specifically about the type of shooting that's involved in the tactical games and how you train for that?
Sure. So the two gun stages are very closely, you know, related to IPSC type.
Okay.
It's, you know, transition from rifle to pistol. They have different implements, you know, Texas Stars, paper targets, steel targets. So very similar to that. Maybe not as precise when it comes to like the cardboard targets. You're just looking to hit cardboard versus in the zones. But the other stages that are a mixture between the functional fitness and the stages you'll do, whether it's, you know, sandbags over the bar, you know, wheelbarrow, sandbag, you know, holds walking to and from, you'll do the fitness portion, then you'll go to the firing line. You'll pick up the firearm, whether it's your pistol or your rifle, you'll shoot whatever the firing sequence is. You'll clear, you know, unload, clear, reholster, and then show clear before you can, you know, re-engage in terms of the fitness portion of it. So it's kind of segmented between the fitness portion and then you go to the firing line. Just obviously that maintains the safety because there are spectators at these events. So, you know, safety is the utmost priority. So you always have to clear, reholster, rifle down, and then you turn around and commence the second round of the fitness portion.
Okay. Okay. This just kind of blows my mind, but I mentioned to my audience yesterday that, you know, we are coming up here to the first of the year. A lot of us have New Year's resolutions, and one of mine is to get off the couch a little bit more, get a little bit more active. I don't think I'll be competing in the tactical games next year, I'll be honest with you. But you know, is this something that, I mean, because in your day job, I should mention, you're the director of training for the U.S. Army Reserve Command, correct?
Yes, sir.
So you are, you know, obviously dealing with training on a daily basis, not only for yourself, but for other members of the Army Reserve. You know, is there a point you think where it's, you know, you sort of cross that line and maybe it's too late or no, it's never too late to actually, you know, start pushing yourself and challenging yourself to do more?
Yeah, I definitely think it's never too late. You know, age, the saying, age is just a number. I truly believe that. I mean, there's different variations. Of course, there's, you know, limitations as we get older. You know, your capabilities, your ability to do certain things, you know, may diminish. But any fitness is better than no fitness, whether you start by getting out and, you know, walking around the neighborhood and then you progress into something that's a little more difficult. Any movement is better than no movement. So I definitely encourage everyone, regardless of age, you know, in all the different units and organizations that I've commanded or whether just leading a directorate, it's all ages. I've had young soldiers who push me and I push them because we want to keep up with each other. You know, now my directorate, because we are at, you know, a higher level, it's more my age. Some are older than me. So it may look different, but we're still getting that movement and that exercise in because ultimately, physical fitness is just as much a part of your readiness as, you know, mental fitness. So I definitely encourage everyone, no matter the age, to definitely just start. You only need one reason to start and then make a plan and stay consistent.
Were there any other competitors at the tactical games that that kind of inspired you as you were participating? Were there anybody that you looked at and went, wow, good for you?
Yeah, I compete with my sister, but not just my sister, the lady who won the elite division. You know, she's a very petite framed woman, but she is so strong and she's so mentally fit. Also, she stays calm. You know, she has a game plan and she sticks to it. And it's really inspiring to watch someone who may be smaller in stature and still able to do all of the things that her other competitors do and that we do. So, I'm definitely inspired by her. My younger sister has always pushed me to, you know, be physically fit. And, you know, she's Secret Service. So she has, you know, a very intense day job also. So we sort of feed off of each other to make sure we're at our top level of fitness, both mentally and physically.
I understand, like, your whole family's fairly athletic from what I understand, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. My dad, from a very young age, you know, my mom's a retired colonel. My dad, they just instilled in us work ethic. You want to stay fit. You want to stay mentally ready. They just, from a very young age, you know, I can remember going to the national park or the state park in South Carolina every weekend. with my dad, and he brought all of us. We would run, you know, the 3 mile trail loop at that park. And then we would go to the gym and lift weights, you know, from a very young age. So he instilled that work ethic in us.
That's fantastic. And so I got to ask, what is your, does your training regimen change when you are getting ready to compete in something like the tactical games, as opposed to, you know, just what you're doing on a everyday basis?
Slightly. Yeah. So I do the functional fitness. I do that in the morning at 5:00. You know, this is a very demanding job. I also have 2 kids and obviously a husband. So in order to balance it out and make sure that I get my fitness in and my time in, I do it early in the morning. As we get closer, or as I get closer to certain events that I do, I will ramp up, you know, the sandbag work, a lot of the specifics that I'll see in the tactical games events. And then I'll go every week to shoot with my shooting coach just to, you know, hone in on those skills, to refine and polish those skills specific to the shooting aspects of the tactical game. So my 5 o'clock routine stays the same every day, 5 o'clock. And then I'll start to add in as I get closer to, you know, certain events.
Okay. When you're not training for like the tactical games, how often do you get a chance to go to the range? Obviously outside of your day job, I should ask.
Well, fortunately, because we have that property where my husband set up that range, at least once a week. We try to go on Sundays. If we can't make it every Sunday, we're definitely doing at least once or twice a month. And because it's, you know, our land, we take the kids out there, we just get some, you know, some proficiency shooting done. So at least I'm staying proficient in, you know, the basic mechanics and shooting skills.
Do you do any like dry fire exercises at home, or is it specifically like live fire that you focus on?
Definitely dry fire. Okay. Definitely. That's one of the keys to success, just to get familiar and stay familiar with your firearms. And obviously transitions from point to point, dry fire is huge. And we also have, my kids have an Oculus, and we have, it's called Ace, and it's a game you upload onto the Oculus, and it's virtual. And there's a handguard that you purchase with it, and it allows you to actually mimic, you know, those shooting skills on a virtual headset. So between that and dry fire, when I can't get out to the range, is huge.
That's fantastic. All right. So when are the 2026 tactical games?
So they have several regional events throughout the year.
Okay.
And then nationals will be again in the November timeframe in Texas, right outside of Austin. So I currently plan to do, there's an event in Lawrence, South Carolina at the Sawmill Shooting Complex. That one will be at the end of May. There's one here in Moyock, North Carolina, that I plan on doing, but that's not until September. I think I might do a team one with my sister. We'll see where we can fit that team one in. It might be in the June timeframe. You know, but they're a whole weekend. You got to drive there. You got to get all your gear there. So it's pretty significant logistically just to get to these events. They're not cheap. The gear isn't cheap. The ammo, you know, all of those things that go into the events. So it's a commitment, which is also why, you know, if I committed, I'm going to get the coaches and I'm going to intend to win. I'm going to make sure that I am preparing myself adequately. So, yeah, that's my plan. May might be the first one.
Okay. Well, I think Bearing Arms Cam and Company might be like your new unofficial fan club. So can we check in with you at some point in 2026?
Yes, sir. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Of course.
Excellent.
I would appreciate that. That's awesome. It's one of those things it's wild. I think it's definitely wild that it's, to me, I just go out and do it. I just go to do work, you know, and I want to be the best, and I want to show my kids, you know, that you can do hard things. So, you know, the extra support is definitely appreciated.
Absolutely. Well, listen, I appreciate you joining us on the program. I hope you and your family have a very Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, and a Happy New Year as well. U.S. Army Reserve Lieutenant Colonel Lauren Sharpless, thank you so much for everything you're doing for this nation, and thank you for joining us on Bearing Arms Cam & Company.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for having me. Happy holidays.
My thanks once again to the Lieutenant Colonel for joining us on the program. And I'm looking forward to talking to her again in the spring. We'll give her a couple of months since I think she said the first regional was in May. We'll check back maybe in March or April, see how she's doing. I got to tell you, the reason why I thought about, you know, let's be the unofficial fan club for the colonel there. In a former life, I was a sports talk show host in Oklahoma City. And my co-host and I one year decided, well, we're gonna pick a team to follow. Besides, you know, obviously when you're a sports talk show host in Oklahoma, you're talking about the Sooners, you're talking about the Cowboys. That was back when the Cowboys were actually a good football team. Anyway, we decided that we were going to become the fans of, and no disrespect intended to the Lieutenant Colonel here, because this is not exactly the same. But we decided we were going to become the unofficial fan club for the team that Sports Illustrated had picked dead last in the college football rankings that year, which happened to be the Idaho Vandals. Obviously, Lieutenant Colonel Lauren Sharpless is not the Idaho Vandals of the tactical games. Quite the opposite, right? She's the University of Alabama. She's LSU. She's, I guess, Indiana this year. But it was a lot of fun. We ended up having the coach of the Vandals on a regular basis. We took a bus full of listeners down to the University of North Texas when the University of Idaho played down there. It was a great deal of fun. So I am looking forward to following Lieutenant Colonel Sharpless' progress throughout next year and continue to be inspired by her example. Maybe again, you'll be inspired as well, but we'll be checking back in with her in a couple of months. And it really was, I thought, a great conversation. I even if I don't participate in the tactical games next year, you know, I mean, to be honest with you, I kind of took a year off of a lot of things after Missy passed away on January the 1st. And I don't really want that to continue in 2026. I want to get back at it in a lot of different aspects of my life. And one of that is physical fitness. Not that I've ever been an Adonis to begin with, but I can and should do more. And this conversation, again, kind of inspired me to do that. So I appreciate Lieutenant Colonel Lauren Sharpless joining us on the program, talking about her story and reminding me, and maybe reminding you as well, that it's never too late to get started. So, all right, on to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. Let's start there with a case out of Los Angeles County. I believe this is Los Angeles County. Headline: man who abducted motorist and child at gunpoint, sentenced. Sentenced, as it turns out, to probation. That's right. California's criminal justice system strikes yet again. A 28-year-old man who held a motorist at gunpoint and forced the victim and his young son to drive him through San Jacinto received his probation yesterday. Brandon Markey Williamson of San Jacinto pleaded guilty back in February. Back in February, he pleaded guilty to two counts of kidnapping and one count each of robbery and child endangerment, as well as a sentence-enhancing allegation of using a firearm during a felony. But there was apparently a period of psychiatric treatment that had been supervised by correctional health officials, according to court records, and he was not officially sentenced in Riverside County. I guess not. So this wasn't L.A. County. This was a Riverside County, but it was My News L.A. reporting on this. And this week again, sentenced by Riverside County Superior Court Judge Emma Smith, who suspended all prison time for the offenses. And instead gave Williamson 3 years mandatory supervision, as well as 20 hours of community service. There was a year-long jail sentence that was included in the judge's order, but according to My News LA, the records indicate that may have involved only a flash incarceration, which means Williamson was booked into the county jail and then was immediately released because of overcrowded conditions in the county's jail system. Why might that jail system be overcrowded? Well, because several years ago, California passed a law ostensibly aimed at reducing overcrowding in the state's prisons that put the onus on county officials to house offenders who otherwise would be incarcerated in a penitentiary in California. Now, the state of California could have built more prison space, by the way. They could have hired more prison guards. They decided not to do that. They decided instead to reduce the punishment for offenders, for violent offenders like Mr. Williamson. My News LA says, according to the Sheriff's Department, it was April 20th, 2023, the defendant, Mr. Williamson, confronted a man and his 7-year-old son outside of a home in San Jacinto, pointed a rifle at him, ordered the victim to drive him to a business district. He then got out of the car at that location. The victim, in this case, immediately dialed 911. Man and the child unharmed, thankfully, during the incident. Deputies converged on the area. They ended up having to search for Williamson. About an hour later, they found him and took him into custody without incident. Never did find the rifle, though. And again, I guess authorities determined that Mr. Williamson was having some sort of mental health episode. I do find it odd, though, that, okay, so let's just assume that Mr. Williamson was not in his right mind at that moment, but that he has received psychiatric care and is now better to at least one degree or another, right? Well, if he wasn't responsible for his actions back in 2023 because of his mental health, then why was he sentenced? Why was he given even 20 hours of community service? I mean, it seems to me like either he was culpable for his actions or he wasn't. And if he wasn't culpable because of his mental state, then there shouldn't be any conditions imposed on him if he is now better. If, on the other hand, he was culpable for his actions at the time, well, he should be getting more than flash incarceration in 20 hours of community service, don't you think? California's criminal justice system is so screwy, but this is just another example, the latest example. We'll have another latest example tomorrow, I suppose, if we had a Friday show of just how weird the criminal justice policies are there in the Golden State. On to today's armed citizen story. This from the state of Nevada, Lyon County, Nevada, where a man was arrested after he was shot at in the town of Fernley. And this is a cautionary tale. You know, we've talked a lot about road rage incidents here on this program. And my attitude has always been and will continue to be, I don't care how big of a jack wagon somebody is on the road. Just drive on, man. Just drive on. And 5 minutes later, you'll have forgotten all about it. Turn up the radio, sing along to a song you like. Don't let it get to you. Austin Baker apparently couldn't let that happen. And he wasn't even involved in the original alleged road rage incident. So Monday, about 2:30 in the afternoon, deputies in Lyon County were dispatched to reports of gunshots in a parking lot that was next to the Wendy's restaurant in the town of Fernley. Two vehicles involved. Apparently, both had been driven away from the restaurant. One of the drivers, who had his girlfriend in the passenger seat, actually showed up at the Lyon County Sheriff's Office substation in Fernley and then called 911, I guess, from the parking lot, saying that he had fired his gun in self-defense. So as it turns out, a couple days earlier, Saturday, December 13th, there was what police describe as an unreported traffic incident where Austin Baker, who's the guy who was arrested here, his wife was allegedly cut off in traffic. And the guy who cut her off allegedly yelled at her. Okay. She took a picture of the car. She showed it to her husband. That's on Saturday. So Monday, Austin Baker's driving down the street. He's in Fernley, Nevada. His wife and his 2-year-old child are in the car with him. And he sees a car that he thought was the car that cut off his wife 2 days earlier. Again, the car allegedly, you know, the driver allegedly cut off his wife in traffic and yelled at her. That's it. No allegation of physical assault, no allegation of harm. Almost 48 hours has gone by at that point. But rather than just let it go, maybe flip off the driver as he's driving by, instead, Austin Baker then decided to follow the vehicle to the Wendy's parking lot. And then he pulled in front of the other vehicle in the Wendy's parking lot to block it from driving away. He then allegedly got out of his vehicle, began to yell at the driver, began making threats to the driver. The other driver grabbed a handgun at that point, put it in his lap. Didn't point it at Baker, didn't pull the trigger at Baker, just put it in his lap, not knowing where this is going, but not able to get out of the parking lot at that point. Baker, according to the police report, then began hitting the man in the face and head, bloodying his own hand, and I imagine the driver's face as well. The victim in this case tried to cover his face. His female passenger tried to shield him from the passenger seat, but Baker continued to hit him, which is when the victim grabbed the handgun that was in his lap, fired two rounds through the vehicle's door towards Baker. One of the rounds actually became lodged in the door. The other missed Baker, hit a dirt mound that was behind Baker. The shots ended the attack. Baker stopped what he was doing, and the man was able to drive away, getting to the substation where he called 911. Baker had started to follow him, apparently, but then when he realized where the victim was going, I'm not going to the sheriff's department, he turned off down a side street. He was located by deputies and taken into custody. Now, Austin Baker is facing charges of aggravated stalking, motor vehicle burglary, child endangerment, and battery. And none of this needed to happen at all. None of it needed to happen at all. Like I said, Austin Baker, if he saw that car that allegedly cut his wife off in traffic 2 days before, could have, you know, rolled down his window and yelled, "You crumb bum," you know, could have, again, given the driver the bird. But instead, decided to not just, you know, yell at the guy, but again, physically assault somebody who may or may not have actually been the guy who cut his wife off in traffic 2 days earlier, right? I mean, I don't even know. But even assuming that it was the same guy, look, the jackassery driving was 48 hours in the past, right? Austin Baker became the aggressor the moment he blocked this vehicle, got out of his car, and started threatening the driver. Austin Baker then became the problem, and a much bigger problem than his wife had faced 2 days earlier when she was cut off in traffic. I confess, I don't understand the mindset. I really don't. I'm grateful that nobody was seriously injured in this case. But again, to me, this is just another cautionary tale. It's not worth it. No matter, again, how big of a jerk somebody is to you in traffic, it is not worth pursuing them, attacking them. They might have a gun, and they might not miss if you're assaulting them, right? Austin Baker is very lucky to be alive today. And if he had been shot and killed, it would have been a justifiable homicide. This driver was actively defending himself from a physical assault, from being beaten. So you don't need to know this. I know you don't need to know this, but maybe, you know, pass it on to somebody who does. If you're cut off in traffic, somebody's tailgating you, somebody's acting like an idiot behind the wheel, and you're the recipient of their idiocy, as infuriating as it might be in the moment, just let it go. Keep driving down the road. Find your favorite song. Turn it up. Sing along. And by the time you get to your destination, it'll all be forgotten. Sadly for Austin Baker, he's going to have a lot of time to remember this, I think, if he is convicted of these crimes, because I don't think that he's going to get 20 hours of community service and a slap on the wrist in terms of, you know, flash incarceration. All right, on to today's good deed of the day. In the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. From my home state of Virginia here, a woman in Chesapeake, Virginia, which is in the southeastern part of the state, kind of near the North, well, not kind of, near the North Carolina border, has lost her house, but she did not lose her life thanks to the quick thinking of her neighbor, who alerted her to the fact that her home, in fact, was on fire. This was, I believe, earlier, I guess this was Wednesday morning, about 4 a.m. Fire crews called to a home for a report of a residential fire. They got there within about 6 minutes of the call. They could see smoke, visible flames coming from inside the home. But thankfully, at that point, the resident was already out. Debbie Williams says that she said she didn't know there was a fire going on, but she heard a bunch of noise at her front door around 4 o'clock in the morning. She said, I walked there just in my bare feet to the front door, and they said, ma'am, your house is on fire. Probably not that calmly. She said, I was scared, but I thank him so very much. Debbie Williams has a young child. They were both able to get out of the home without any injuries. Firefighters said they made an aggressive attack on the flames. They stopped the blaze from spreading to other parts of the home. But it is unlivable, at least at the moment. It might be able to be repaired, but at the moment, the American Red Cross is assisting Debbie Williams with temporary housing. Again, thankfully, nobody injured. There was a cat that was inside, but firefighters managed to even get the family pet out. Williams said the fireman got the cat to her after they made sure that there was no fire. Said she must have run away from what was going on back in the bedroom. Apparently, it was an electrical fire. Started in a panel box, which is, to me, like just one of those nightmare scenarios. You know, you can protect yourself against, you know, a heater catching on fire. Don't use a kerosene or propane heater inside your home. But man, when it's just something like, you know, a panel box that goes bad and all of a sudden, boom, the fire starts. As somebody who lives in a really old house with really old wiring, I'll tell you, that's the stuff of nightmares for me. Unclear whether or not there was a working smoke detector, but again, the alert neighbor at least was able to help Debbie Reynolds get out of the home there without any injuries. So in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. The anonymous stranger there in Chesapeake, Virginia, we thank you for your very, very good deed. And that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I appreciate you being a part of the program as always. Monday, I believe that we are going to be able to have our conversation with Assistant Attorney General Harmeet Dhillon, head of the DOJ Civil Rights Division, head of the new Second Amendment section. Unless something happens with the Assistant Attorney General's schedule, we should be able to bring that interview to you on Monday. Primarily, we are going to be talking about the lawsuit filed, the first lawsuit filed by the Second Amendment section against the U.S. Virgin Islands government. Obviously there's a ton of stuff that we can talk to the Assistant Attorney General about. I'm hoping those will be the first of many conversations, but I do want to focus on what this new litigation is all about. And then maybe the criteria that the Second Amendment section is looking for in terms of filing additional, lawsuits, because Lord knows it's a target rich environment out there for the Second Amendment section, but, really looking forward to the Assistant Attorney General joining us here on Bearing Arms, Cam & Company on Monday, so I'd encourage you to check that out. In the meantime, be sure to check out BearingArms.com on Friday, well, throughout the rest of today, Friday and the weekend as well. We're keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. If you like what you see, I would encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold or VIP Platinum member. Go to BearingArms.com/subscribe, use the promo code FIGHT, and you can get 60% off of your VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum membership. And we certainly do thank you for your support. All right, until we talk again, have a great rest of your week, good weekend as well, and we'll talk to you again soon. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.